So welcome again, everyone. We're going to read as an introduction Matthew chapter 5. So welcome to those that might be watching at home. There's not many vacant seats, so that might have been a reasonable decision. So we're going to read Matthew chapter 5, starting at verse 1 to finish at about verse 20. And then after that, I'll invite Vic to come straight up. Thank you.
Well, this is fabulous. And, you know, when the Apostle Paul greets people, and especially in Romans, I think it's 16, where he salutes, he keeps on saying, "I salute you, I salute you, I salute you." And you know what the word salute means? It means to really warmly hug each other. How cool is that? So what I would like you to do is I'd like you to just get up and salute someone, but really salute them. You know, give them a warm hug. Can you do that? Yeah, sure. Come on, let's do it. Yeah, here. There you go. So, as you can see, when Paul was a really emotional man, and he loved his brothers and sisters, especially he saw them as his family. So, of course, you don't go up to your family and just go, "Hey, can I salute you?" and you give a handshake. Like, I've tried to break handshaking with Luke. Luke just needs to be loosened up a bit, and now he's actually hugging me, which is terrific. So there you go. So, all right, so Matthew 5 and verse 1, as you can see, Jesus, seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain, and when he was seated, his disciples came to him. So you've got the multitude, and then you've got the disciples. Then he opened his mouth and taught them, saying... Now, I want you to just imagine being in that crowd listening to what Jesus was about to say. And even more so, just imagine being one of those disciples closer to him, really close, and being one of his disciples. Just imagine that, how great that would be. And after all, you've been a travelling companion with Jesus now for some time, and you get to know where he's sort of coming from, how he feels, how he thinks, what he observes, what he tastes, and how he deals with various people, yeah? And so you've already witnessed so much of Jesus as the person, and you are convinced that he is someone absolutely special, absolutely special. So Jesus says, here it is, he says, "Let me tell you why you are here." And that's the same thing for us. Jesus is saying, "Well, let me tell you why you are here. You might not know exactly, but let me tell you why you are here." So you have to think, well, why am I here? It's a good question. Jesus knows, and I guess we do too on certain levels. Now, after those, we call it the Sermon on the Mount, there's a whole range of doctrine that Jesus presents, his doctrine. At the end of that, in Matthew 7, verses 28 to 29, this is how the crowd reacts. You know, we read from various versions. When Jesus had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Now, I like the Message version of this because it's just stunning. When Jesus concluded his address, the crowd burst into applause. Absolutely just burst into applause. They had never heard teaching like this. You know, it was apparent that he was living everything that he was saying. You know, it was a total contrast to the religious teachers at the time. And this was the best teaching ever. And the crowds knew. They actually felt it, absolutely felt it. Now, I then have to pose a question to myself. Do I burst into applause every time I hear Jesus' words? I go, I wish I could. I mean, I love Jesus, you know, and he's the real model. He's the model that I try to model my life after. So, but every time I read and hear his words, then I just go, he's awesome. Just love, absolutely love listening to him. And I want to acknowledge that. And, you know, I want to just, I've witnessed his words and I am witnessing his beautiful character. And I just want to acknowledge that in my own way. You know, when you see a concert or something, you know, some really great group playing or singing, you just want to clap. You know, you really want to. And when you listen to Jesus' words, you just want to just somehow acknowledge it rather than sitting there going, yeah, that's pretty, well, that's all right. No, let it rip, I reckon. Let it go. Now, what did he say that was so different? You go, well, he said so many things. But, you know, a lot of the things that he said, even on the Sermon on the Mount right through, were very confronting, really in-your-face confronting stuff, and also filled with hope. So it was like, you want to know the news, the reality of your life? Well, I'll let you know, but also I'm going to give you a way to process this and come out of it. So what did he say? In essence, because there's a backstory here as well, so what he was saying is, well, look at that. Said, you're in darkness. Wow, okay, that's rather heavy. You've got no spiritual light. Because Jesus knew the crowds were in darkness. They had been totally misled, and he saw them. And he's saying, really, you're oppressed, you're fractured, you're leaderless, you're hopeless, truthless, godless. Wow, that's pretty heavy stuff, isn't it, to say those things. And this is a really incredible reality check for the crowds. And individually, individuals within the crowds would have thought, yeah, we are in great darkness. We are so in blackness. And how do they feel then when they start realizing their situation? Well, Jesus knew how they felt. He knew that they were anxious and they were sad and that they were empty and that they were totally and utterly disconnected from God and in some ways from themselves. And then, of course, this is okay as a story, but it has to come back to us. How do we feel? How would we feel if we were there and we suddenly realise that this is talking about us, you know, individually? And also we need to say, well, did we ever exist in darkness? And how about in 2023? Do we feel some of these aspects? Do we feel anxious? Do we feel at times empty? Do we feel disconnected? Because if we do, these words are to us, as they were to the crowds and the disciples around Jesus. But we also know that there were the so-called religious leaders. I call them the religion leaders. You know, there was a religion. They weren't religious. Well, they were religious in one sense. But these religious leaders were incensed when they heard Jesus talking in those terms. You know, they believed that they were the light bearers. No, this can't be us. You know, we're not in great darkness. We are the shining lights. And when Jesus alluded to the words, especially from Isaiah, which they would have known, it just drove them crazy. And those words in Isaiah, we know, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. They would have known those passages that Jesus was going to reference. You know, the light of which Isaiah is talking about here, prophesied, was to be so brilliant, so absolutely brilliant, that it was to embrace every man and woman and child born into this world. That was the light. That was the light that Isaiah was prophesying about. And so Jesus brings the multitude, brings us to the core of our very existence. He says, right, I'm going to bring you right back to the very beginning. I want you to get to the grassroots of why you are here and what is it all about. Yeah. Because you're in darkness and somehow you've missed that, you've lost that. And that beginning, of course, is God. Three simple words, in the beginning. They're profound words, aren't they? In the beginning, God. In the beginning, God. And that's where God belongs, right at the beginning, doesn't he? You know, God created us to live to the glory of him. That's why we are created. And the people, the crowds there, they just didn't realize. They just didn't get it. The multitude had lost this beginning. They had lost the meaning of life and what life was all about. It was about giving glory to God, and God created us to give him glory. And, you know, our contemporary society is there. Our contemporary society is virtually, rapidly, I was going to say drifting, no, it's sort of cascading, rolling down a hill like on the sea like a tsunami. It's away from God. They're just disappearing, and they are losing the beginning. They are losing God. So for us, we know these passages. In the beginning, earth was, and again, I'm using the Message. I love how the Message presents it. The earth was a soup of nothingness, a bottomless emptiness, an inky blackness. And God's Spirit brooded like a bird above the watery abyss. And God spoke, light, and light appeared. God saw that light was good and separated light from dark. So just imagine how dark the earth was and how empty and how cold it was. Until, and I've used these words deliberately as a contrast, until the warmth of God's breath brought forth light. You got this coldness and bleakness, and then you got the warmth of God's breath to actually activate life on planet Earth. So what is the dark? Question, why was the light good, do you think? You think, now, light, why is it good? Light is light. What's so good about light? And you go, yeah. I mean, I'll let you think. I can do the classic, which I really find very confronting. If I'm in the audience and I say, so what do you reckon good means? You go, oh, don't ask me. You know, is that how you felt? Like, yeah. Well, I can relate, because if I'd be sitting there and someone looks at me and I just sort of shrink down, you know, like, don't ask me that question. Like, why is light good? Well, I don't know. Is it something to do with physically giving life? Yeah, okay, so that's a good question. Well, that's a pretty good question. You were going to say that, probably. What about morally? Light morally gives purpose. So not only is it physically good, but it's also morally good. It gives purpose, it gives direction, and it has a connection to God. So you see, so light has got a lot of fantastic sort of qualities. So you've got physical side, but the moral sense of light. And so then I have to say, well, what about what is darkness? And of course your brain goes, oh, look, it's the opposite. Well, of course it is. It's the opposite. The opposite to light. It's a metaphor for our lives in some ways, isn't it? It's sort of, our lives can be a soup of nothingness. Like, I mean, I like soup, but yeah, you can't do anything. Yeah, like... Stagnate, dark, you know, unless you're a mushroom, you know, but, you know, like, it's a metaphor for our lives, a soup of nothingness, our existence without the warm life-giving light. That's our life. It's without the warm life-giving light. That's blackness. So here, right at the beginning, what's happening is that Jesus is presenting this to the people there, to the crowds and to us. And he says, this is you, and I'm giving you something that is going to be absolutely superior. It's going to change your life totally. And so the warmth of God's breath, here it is, the warmth of God's breath brought forth the one true light to this dark, cold world to us. Again, the warmth. You know, the warmth of God, his love and his compassion, gave us the warm light. And that warm light was his wonderful Son to our bitterly bleak and cold world. So you can see how being in the crowd, you're beginning to really feel the brilliance of Jesus, and how he talks and how he presents and how he gives you and gives us a wonderful alternate way of life, away from blackness to something that's light. And so Jesus uses and he presents who he is very specifically. John the Baptist did, he said, I'm not that light, but here's the light. I'm going to show you the light. And it was Jesus. And so in John 8, verse 12, he said, I am the light of the world. The person who follows me will never live in darkness, but will have the light that gives life. So there's a lot in that verse, and what Jesus is saying is really very, very profound. Never live in darkness. Wow. So here, darkness is that quality of life that is hopeless, full of despair. So if I have Jesus and Jesus' light, I'm not going to have a life full of despair, stumbling towards ultimate eternal death. So Jesus is giving us this incredible choice. Wow, that's just amazing. And by absolute contrast, Jesus illuminates our life. So you've got darkness and sort of blackness. The opposite of illumination is, well, I don't know, whatever it is. Okay, someone can tell me later or now if you can figure it out. So by absolute contrast, Jesus illuminates our life. And we have a bright path, and our life grows, blooms, full of hope, rich in quality. So you've got that contrast. You've got this no quality, blackness, death, nothingness, and suddenly we've got this beautiful life that blooms, just like a beautiful flower. It just blooms, and it's full of hope, rich in quality. And Jesus, by following Jesus, we are encouraged and supported towards eternal life. So choice. See, the choice that Jesus is presenting to us and to them. And Jesus' vital emphasis is the person who follows me. Follows me. Why? Why? Why follow Jesus? Well, Jesus is giving us all the good reasons. Because he's saying there is a choice that you need to make. He's saying you need to make a choice now. And this choice to the crowds, to the multitude, had been blocked. He's looking at the multitude and he's saying, I'm giving a way through. It's going to be an illuminated path, and I'm going to tell you who is going to do that. It's me. And they thought, wow, we didn't know. No one told us about this. No one told us. And they didn't realize that they were living in darkness. I mean, they were just living in darkness, thinking, what sort of quality of life is that? Hopeless quality of life. So, and Jesus really nails it now. Like in Matthew 15 and verse 14 in the NIV, he says, right, you've got a choice of who you're going to follow. You can follow me and God and what I'm presenting, or you can follow. And he would have probably looked down, and the scribes and the Pharisees would have been like, yeah, it's them. No, Jesus was looking at the scribes and Pharisees and the people that thought that they were the light bearers. So here it is in Matthew 15, verse 14. Leave them. They are blind guides. If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. Yeah. Jesus was really condemning, wasn't he, and dismissing Israel's religious leaders. And by implication, he was actually forcing his disciples and anyone who wanted to have another alternate way of looking at life was to make a choice. He says, now, you've got to make a choice. I've presented these religious leaders to you and what they are like. They are blind leaders leading the blind, which you are. Do you want to be the blind ones and then you're going to fall into a pit? No. And so he's saying you need to make a choice. So the clear message here is that Jesus is presenting, isn't it, is to follow the example of Jesus. Not their example, but follow Jesus' example, because their life was full of hypocrisy. And Matthew 23, the message, I want to read to you the message from Matthew 23, verse 27. Fantastic. Fantastic. The way Peterson just puts his sort of, it's not Jordan Peterson, it's another Peterson, puts it together. It could have been Jordan. Anyway. So Matthew 23, verse 27. Here it says, you're hopeless. He's actually addressing the religious leaders and he's saying, you're hopeless. So how'd you like to be called that? I don't know. None of your teachers would ever dare calling any student hopeless, hopeless. They may have thought it at times, but very rarely would they have ever said it, because that's just not what teachers do. They shouldn't do it. And, you know, I would be very sad if any teacher did do it. Anyway, so here's Jesus. He's saying to the scribes and Pharisees, you're hopeless, you religion scholars and Pharisees. Frauds. He says, you're frauds. You're like manicured grave plots, grass clipped, and the flowers bright, but 6 feet down, it's all rotting bones and worm-eaten flesh. People look at you and think, you're saints, just lovely saints, but beneath the skin, you're total frauds. So he's saying, well, these are the people that I don't want you to follow. We might say, yeah, you know, they deserve, these scribes and Pharisees, and religious leaders, they deserve Jesus' words. But can the same words apply to us? Don't go to read about scribes and Pharisees. Yeah, like, you know, they were just sort of into their scriptures. They were so strict. You know, they looked the part. They dressed the part. They said the sort of right words. And, so can it apply to us, to me, to you? Well, maybe not so much to us about religious leaders, but it's to do with our lifestyle as well. He's actually aiming at their lifestyle, at their mindset. Jesus knows, and what's more, Jesus knows the human condition. He says, I know that you're sheep. I know you're sheep. And you know what sheep do? They love to follow. They need a shepherd. And I know that innately, this is what you are. You are sheep. And so if someone says, hey, guys, follow, you just go, okay, we'll follow. He says that the problem is you're following the wrong people, the wrong person. And the way you know that they are the wrong people is because I'm telling you how to discern, how to be switched on about the wrongness of these people. And it's to do with their behaviour. And it's not based on God's value system. It's not to do with God's value system. They are hypocrites, total frauds. So we need to evaluate who we follow using God's system. Now, all of us follow. And the question then is, who are you following? Who am I following? So you think, well, I am following someone. You know, all of us follow someone or some group of things. You know, who are you following? I've got this little screed that I've written here. Who is up ahead of you showing the way? Who's up ahead showing the way, pointing out the rotten or the rough places in the road? Is anyone there saying, don't go there, it's full of potholes? Making sure that you don't make the wrong turn? Who's there for you that says, look, don't go that way? Just think about going that way. You know, we all need people in our lives like that, I believe. None of us ever reaches a point where we can say, I can do this on my own. None of us reach that. Doesn't matter how old we are. We don't reach a point where we say, yeah, I think I've got it. I've figured it out and I can do it all by myself. I don't need any help. You know, even though I've been a brother in Christ for nearly 55 years or so, no, it's been good 55 years, I find that now as much as ever I need the encouragement. I need good people around me all the time who pray better than I do. Boy, do they ever. Who witness more than I do, yes they do, and who have a deeper knowledge of God's word than I do, absolutely. I need their example, absolutely, their encouragement and the challenge they provide to my life. And I want to follow these people, and I do, and I'm sure we all do. We have people, individuals that you just go, I love being in that person's company because somehow It makes me a better person, makes me more like Christ, because that person is showing Christ to me in a way that I need, all right? And what's more, here's the next thing, who is following you? Because, remember, we follow someone, but someone is always following us as well. And here's the thing, if they are following us, we need to be an incredibly powerful and positive example. We need to be good people to be followed. So I've got about 20, I'd say, right now someone is following you. Take that note. Someone looks to you to show them the way. You go, okay. Someone prays because they heard you pray. Someone is watching you fight your personal battles, and they admire you for that, and they really want to know how you're managing to actually fight your personal battles. Someone wants to be like you. Someone is cheering you on. Someone sees Christ in your life. That's fantastic. Someone admires your strength, you know, like you go, and some people ask me, like, hey, Vic, how do you manage, you know, with Anna, you know, in Sash Ferguson in the memory unit, you know, like, you must be pretty strong. I just go, yeah, sure, okay. But they seem to think that I've got some sort of inner strength, and it's not like that at all. But someone admires your strength for whatever way that you are processing life. Someone is borrowing your faith because they have none themselves. Someone believes you are the best Christian they know. The best Christian they know. Someone is hanging tough because you are standing tall. So they use you and they can hang on a bit more because you are. Someone is smiling when they think of you. Isn't that nice? When they think of you, do people smile? I'm sure they do. Sure they do. Someone thanks God for your friendship, which is nice. Someone cares that you make the right choices, and that's important. This choice factor, that you make the right choices, because they need you to make the right choices, because they need you in their life, because they are following you, and they want someone who's got the right choices. Right now, someone is following you, so that's important. So as a result, the exhortation for us is that we need to keep on the path. We need to keep our eyes on the prize. We've got to be focused and know exactly what our identity is, who we are as individuals. And so for us, we need to find some good examples to follow. And don't forget that someone is following you as you follow others who are following Jesus Christ. And the last point, don't let that someone who's following you down. There's a responsibility. Don't let them down. And that's absolutely vital. Now we're at Matthew 5, verse 13. But I'm going to read from the Message. And it is so good and so graphic. So here it is. Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be, and I'm just going to read the salt and the light. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Pretty straightforward. You know, so now salt makes us thirsty, doesn't it? Makes us thirsty for more. You want more. You either want a drink or you just say, I need a bit more salt on that. It spices up the food, as we know. It enhances the flavour. It preserves. And so salt, it's got some fantastic qualities. And so why did Jesus use this simile? You know, not only that we are to be this for each other, we need to be salt for each other, but the community out there needs to see our enhanced lives. Our lives have been salted. They've been spiced up by what we know and what we believe in, by Jesus. You know, he has spiced up our life. And you know, if people out there see that, they want a bit of that. They go, wow, your life is sort of, it's got something. It's rich. It's sort of spicy and it's great. You know, where do you get it from? But they need to actually see that. And if we're honest, Are we this to those around us? Are we the salt for them? Do we spice up their life? Do you have people that you associate with that they like your company and what you talk about and how you bring Christ into your conversation in all sorts of subtle and gentle ways? Or, they just want to know, and that's the exhortation. Do they say that we bring out the God flavours by my life of faith? And God flavours, I could just expand on that. Like I could ask questions, what are God flavours? And we could just go and do this fantastic discussion. And as a divergent thought, just going off sort of on another planet, as it were, think about our life and the long line of salt people in our path. We've had people that have salted us. Not assaulted, but salted us, in the nicest way possible. Throughout our lives, people have been salt that have been sprinkling their salt, sprinkling Christ on us to give us life as well, and have expanded and enlarged our lives. All those are God placed in our life, and so that we know the love of God. And there's another thought going off onto another sort of tangent. Salt needs to be shaken out onto us. It needs to be shaken out onto us to be effective. It can't just be there and, we are salt and we just sit there. We need to shake ourselves over people like we did hugging at. I mean, that's a bit like feeling a bit of salt, that was good for those of you that are a bit sweaty. That was really good. Yeah. Anyway, so all those, and so consequently, it needs to be pure and not diluted. We can't have corrupted salt, messed up salt, because that's just going to mess up the whole flavour. And at no point is it being any good to be in a fancy salt shaker sitting on a shelf. Like, man, you're great salt in a salt shaker, but you're just sitting on a shelf. I know it's up there, and you're in a pretty good container. And then all these other people in different salt shakers as well, and they look pretty good on the shelf too. But that's all they do. They sit there and they look pretty good. Become collectible items by someone at some time in the future. All right. So, and now we're getting to the next bit. So Jesus, having used the salt simile of bringing out the God flavours of this earth, continues in verse 14, doesn't he? Here's another way to put it. He says, you're here. And this is interesting the way this is presented, because as you'll see, I'll just present it. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colours in the world. God colours, yeah. Again, we could talk about that. God is not a secret to be kept. I'm going to expand on these little dot points. Not a secret. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. We know the imagery. Now, this is the bit I want you to take notice. If I make you light bearers... See, it's a different slant from some of the other versions. It's now Jesus is doing this. Jesus is making us light bearers. It's not we are becoming light bearers. What does it say? Just that bit there, just one of you fellas, just that verse 14. Just read that really loud.
We're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand.
Okay, so see, that's addressing you as putting it. But now here Jesus is saying, I'm actually doing this. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket. I'm not going to hide you under a bucket. I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. See how it's phrased it? It's Jesus is doing this. Jesus is creating us as light. He is placing us there, and now he says, shine, shine. It's not us. And same thing, then I say, well, do I know what it means to be light, bring out the God colours in the world? That's something that, I'd love to talk about. And, again, that'd take a whole night. But, so what does Jesus do now? He is making this really personal. He asks, do you understand what I'm telling you? Do you know what I'm getting at, says Jesus? Do you understand what I'm telling you? I'm telling you that you are to be the ones who will be my representatives and ambassadors. You will add value to, you will add value to their lives. Attract them to God. You'll be the ones that are going to do that. And what's more, it's our privilege and honour and responsibility to be Christ's representatives. Isn't that brilliant? It's our, you know, our honour. Jesus is giving this incredible, honourable task. He says, I want you to be my representative. I want you to be my ambassador in this dark, spiritually starved world, to shine in their darkness. And the most beautiful part about this is that we don't have to shine alone. It's not just one little light there. We are all lights, and we are there to help each other. And that's the wonderful thing. We are there as a I don't know, cooperative. No, that doesn't sound right. A crowd of lights. Yeah, a crowd of lights. Lots of light. Plenty of light. We're just glowing everywhere and shining together. And that makes a greater impact, even though one light makes a huge impact. And then Jesus says, I'm calling you to live distinctly, distinctively. You know, and what does distinctive mean? It's not going to ask you, but what does it mean? It means to get noticed. I want you to be noticed. I want you to stand out in some ways. I want you to be living your life in, as a life of faith. And people need to see that you are so distinctive in that. So Jesus said, we need to stand out like a light on a hill or a light for a room. And apparently they say if you lit a candle on a dark night and you were 3 km away, one candlelight can be seen 3 km away, which is pretty amazing, isn't it? Just one little candle. So Jesus is saying, you don't have a choice about this because I have called you to be this, to be distinctive. Now, we could, and this is what happens, we could be tempted to adopt a siege mentality. We go, I've got this sort of brilliant thing that I've been given, and this is that sort of almost that siege mentality. It's a bit like the one talent person. We're just going to close in. The world's out there and it's coming to get us, which is true. And as a result, we're just going to put up this huge wall, and we'll have machine guns and rockets and, you know, guards up there. And if anyone comes near to us, we're just going to blast them off the face of the earth, which happens, mind you. Okay. So building up high sort of walls around us and our families and our faith, and we retreat from culture and we hunker down inside ecclesial halls and close communities while waiting for Christ's return. You reckon that happens? It does, doesn't it? We just become introverted and fearful, and we get worried about we're going to be gotten by out there, which is true, but we're going to be gotten in a much more subtle way than that. So, and retreat is not an option. We're just going to go, hang on, we're out of here. We're just going to leave Hyde Park, and we'll build a little ecclesial hall somewhere on the north coast of Tassie or somewhere, or no, Kangaroo Island. Yeah, let's all go to Kangaroo Island just by ourselves, and we'll put, you know, like just block everybody off. And we can't also have ungodly attack. You know, in the deep south, you've got some various groups that just go, yeah, and they have banners and they march and, you know, like shoot them and kill them because Christ would love that sort of stuff. You know, so we can't actually go into this sort of ungodly attack, as it were, even though we might be tempted to actually go, their lifestyle is just gross and we're not into it. But if we started having banners everywhere, you know, and say, homosexuality, let's kill them all sort of stuff, and, you know, which happens in places, as we know. So anyway, so ungodly attack is not an option. Surrender is not an option. Going, oh, it's too hard. Let's just be part of the group. You know, like, yeah, let's just do it. So we are called to God-glorifying engagement with a culture around us. We live in the world, So therefore, we've got to shine in the world. We've got to shine in the world. And because we are full participants in society. That's where we live, okay? Whether we like it or not, we're there, and we've got to actually be better than what society is offering us. And all of us could have anecdotal. I could tell you a couple of really beautiful stories over the last 2 weeks that I've been in situations where, totally out of the blue, I start having conversations with atheists. And I go, how did that happen? And it's about marriage. And they, you know, and I said, yeah, look, I'm giving a series of talks on marriage at Glenlock. And they go, Glenlock, where's that? Marriage? Well, what? You're into marriage? Yeah. Oh, no, we don't agree with that sort of stuff. And then you start having a conversation, and it's really quite interesting. So you've got to sort of be prepared to overcome some of that fear, which I have. Like, I just go, no. But as I get older, I just don't care. Like, you know, yeah, look, you're atheist. Yeah, look, I don't believe what you... I don't actually say it that way, but, you know. And you just lay it on them, and they just look at you and go, yeah, that guy is just... He's just... Yeah, they can't quite put words to who you are, but that's anyway. All right. So, and this is a point I want to make here. It is not as if Jesus is saying, if you work really, really hard, then you can manifest a flame for me. Like, you've got to work hard, you know, like you've got to work hard. It's like, you know, if you're out in the wilderness and you've got to create a fire, you've got to get sticks and you've got to rub like crazy and, you know, you've got to sweat away until you get a little, and then you blow all over it, and it's all up to you. No, it's not. That's not what Jesus is saying. Or if you can transform yourself into a container of salt that is you're prepared to actually sprinkle, then that's what it's about. No, it's not about that at all. Because if you can do it, it's about you, isn't it? If you can do this, then it's about you, and it's not about us at all. It's about Jesus, and it's about God. So Jesus says, I will make you. You will be salt, and you will be light, because of my great favour and mercy and love for you. That is why I'm doing this. That is my motivation. I will do this because I love you. I'm going to change your life. You'll be light and you'll be salt. It's a gift that God gives to us, and it's a gift of grace. That's what it's about. It's a gift of grace from God and from Jesus that we need to give to others. You know, salt is there to enhance. Light is there to brighten. And who are we brightening? Well, we're going to cover that. So Jesus says, I'm inviting you. I'm not dragging you. I'm not forcing you. I'm inviting you. I'm helping you to step out of the darkness into the light. Like that blackness behind that door, it's pretty scary stuff. I want you to just step out into the light. And it's just going to change your life. It's just going to be so good. And so it goes on. God is not to be a secret to be kept. Like people might go, and you've probably heard this, and you hear stories about this where someone says, hey, I didn't know you were a Christian. And you go, oh, yeah, okay, that's a bit of a worry. So you've kept God a secret, have you? You've kept Jesus a secret in your life. I didn't know you were a Christian. I didn't know you believed in God. You know, it's like these people, this atheist. You believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. Oh, okay. Well, that's an interesting approach to life, that person said. I said, well, who do you rely on? I rely on, well, love. We're talking about marriage. He said, I believe love is going to get me through. And I said, so how long have you been married for? Oh, well, the second marriage. And I thought, yeah, right. And, you know, so... You can't keep God a secret. This is the whole point. And we need to go public in our lives, and public ecclesially as well. We just got to do it. That's what Jesus wants from it. As public as a city on a hill. You know, I'm not going to hide you under a bucket, says Jesus. I'm not going to do that. I don't want you to do it either. You know, so there's no option. Don't hide your light under a bucket, because that's not what it's about. I'm putting you on a light stand. And now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, guess what? I want you to shine, really shine. That's why you're up there. And I want you to keep open house. Open house. That's our life. Our ecclesia. Us, we need to be open to people. We need to be generous with our lives. That's what Jesus is saying. Be generous. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with you and with God. You know, once I started talking with these individuals, I was open. Yeah, like, yeah, this is it. And they started opening up. And I said, yeah, well, we believe in this, but maybe we don't. So what do you think of marriage? You know, do you really believe in marriage? I said, yeah, I believe in marriage for life. For life, yeah. They went, oh, well, I don't know about that, you know. And I said, well, why don't you believe in that for life? What are the other options? Well, you know, we're going to have multiple marriages. Or why get married at all? You know, and I thought, well, they're talking and I'm talking. And it was like, I found it fascinating. And then we talk about love. And he said, look, they said, do you believe that you can love a couple of people at the same time? I thought, this is going in a strange. I said, I can love a lot of people at the same time. I love my parents, my kids, you know, I've got friends. In fact, in some ways, I could end up loving you. And they said, what? No. I said, well, you know, why not? And it was just, so what you do is you just open up and you start chatting away. And it means that you're shining Jesus to them. And it's not hard. I thought it was, but I thought, nah, it's not really. So, and shining is about reflecting light, okay, rather than our own inner glow. Again, this is an important thing. It's not us. It's got nothing about our inner glow. We might have an inner glow. The person, you might say, that person just glows. They are just so warm and lovely. Terrific. That's true. And we do have this inner glow about us, but this is not what it's about, is it? It's we really, going back to the very early model, we are like the earth at creation without form, and we are void and we are dark and lifeless. We cannot glow. So we need an external source. In other words, without God and with Jesus, we have no light. There's no light at all. So we need them. So it's absolutely essential to know them. So you see, this is where it's going. We've got to know them. Really know Jesus. We really got to know God and have a warm relationship with him. Because if we don't, here's the next thing. We can't give to others what we ourselves don't have. Like if we don't know Jesus, like how can you talk about Jesus? We can't share the love of Jesus because we don't know what the love of Jesus is. What is the love of Jesus? You go, well, what? If we don't know what that love is, and if we haven't experienced it, we can't give it to others what we ourselves don't have. So we've got to know, you know, like why Jesus and who Jesus and what's so important about Jesus and why do I need Jesus in my life? Because once we get that sorted out, then we can actually talk to people and show Jesus to others. So reflecting Christ, it's essential that he lives inside of us. You know, we often talk about that Jesus, and Paul uses those terms, you know, Christ lives in me. And you have to say, well, what does that mean? Well, Christ lives in me. In other words, his character, his words, the way he processes things, his attitudes and his actions and how he loves, they are in me, and I now am living those out to those around me. You know, Jesus wants to empower us to talk and live and think like he does. And he's giving that. I mean, scriptures, you know, it's there. It's just Jesus is there. And he says, I want you to have me in you. And that means you'll start to reflect me in this world that is so black. And they need it. They need it as we need it. So we are to be people showing the reflection of Christ in a Christless world. Our reflection of him is the closest thing to Christ that most will ever see. You know, where else will they see Christ if it's not in us? Where else will they see that? I want you to just think about that for a moment. If someone doesn't know Jesus, they can see our reflection in how we treat them, how we love them, and we can be hands and feet to them in our lives. And we can acknowledge that the reason we're doing this, we've actually modelled that on Jesus' life. It's a pretty significant thought, don't you think? It's something that's really just awesome to think about. And so who do we shine to, and how is it evident? Well, shining, it's an energy force. It's behavioural, isn't it? To shine means it's a behaviour towards someone and with someone. You are now behaving in a certain way towards someone. So it's behavioural. And Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 and 16, one of those great verses, do all things, and this is shining, do all things without grumbling or disputing. So here's our behaviour. Do things without grumbling and disputing. And the outcome to us personally is this. So there's an outcome. If we like this, there's going to be an outcome. Like you go, wow, there's a result of the way I behave. And that is that you may be blameless and innocent children of God without blemish. So by being that, you are now becoming more of something, more blameless, more innocent, and you're becoming truly children of God without blemish. And the general environment to whom and to which we are now shining is in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, says Paul, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Hold fast to the word of life so that in that day, in the day of Christ, says Paul, I may be proud that I have not laboured in vain. And that those words can actually refer to us. If we do that, if we can actually shine, then we can be so thrilled that we didn't run and waste our lives. Our lives were not just vain, this sort of puff of air that just goes, disappears. And who do we shine to? Primarily to our family. Oh, there's Anna, and there's Lucas, and there are the three girls, and there's Julia. So who do we shine to? Well, primarily to our family, don't we? And the way we shine is by providing an environment where every member grows to know the love of God and Jesus. That's how we shine to our family. And you can see Anna there, because she's got Lewy body syndrome and Parkinson's and all that stuff. You can see this crowd around her, and their warmth is sort of embracing her. She's not quite sure what's going on. You can see those vacant eyes there, like, whoa, I'm enjoying this, but I'm not sure who these people are, totally. But nevertheless, you still shine and you will affect them. And Anna does get affected by our company all the time. And shining inside the ecclesia, we know this one so well. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love one for another. So ecclesially, like we started, give each other a hug, but physically, but mentally connect, saying, I really love you guys, I really love you. This is wonderful, and I love you because of God and because of Jesus. And second to last slide, be genuinely concerned with the growth. So genuinely concerned with the growth and welfare of a brother or sister in Christ and the plight of the needy inside the ecclesia. Yes, we get involved with the plight out there, and so we should, but we need to be really, really genuinely involved in the welfare of each other. And that's absolutely vital. And Romans 12 says this. And reading from, you may not have heard of the Passion Translation. It's one of the latest translations. It's superb. Here's another one, TPT Translation. And they've actually been very, very scholarly, and they've really worked through, and they've tried to bring it to the way we speak our environment. Like if you were in China, like the Chinese translation is geared in some ways to, there's those Chinese type of things that are definitely involved in China, I suppose. What do you reckon?
Idioms,
yeah. And we tend to go, you know, sometimes when you read, I remember when I was there and I was saying something, they all burst into laughing. I thought, what did I just say? Because it wasn't in their idiom, or the idiom just read it totally differently. But so the TPT, the Passion Translation, here just goes, I'll just read this, and also it's very similar to this. Let the inner movement of your heart always be to love one another. So the inner movement. So, yeah, it's lovely. The inner movement, it's not external. Inner movement of your heart always be to love one another. And never play the role of an actor wearing a mask. Despise evil and embrace everything that is good and virtuous. Be devoted to tenderly loving your fellow believers as members of one family. Try to outdo yourself in respect and honour of one another. It's great, isn't it? It's a great, it's beautifully phrased. And here, don't just pretend to love others, really love them, hate what is wrong, hold tightly to what is good, love each other with genuine affection, and take delight in honouring each other. And that's shining. That's what shine. And that's what it's about. And with the last one here, and this is, you know, what you want to do and have been doing and intend to do this year in 2023, it's reflect or mirror Christ. It's to reflect and mirror Christ. Be Christ, bring Christ, and broadcast Christ by the way we reflect and represent Christ in our life. Isn't that great? Be Christ, bring Christ, and broadcast Christ by the way we reflect and represent Christ in our life. So what a great thing that you have and that you've chosen, and you know, it's something that is so important for all of us, and of course all of us want to do that and want to be that in our life.